Hello folks, in this video I'm going to introduce you to the core concepts of C++ AMP from scratch. In other words, I'm not going to assume that you know anything about the API, only that you want to learn about it. And I'm going to do that here in Visual Studio 2012 release candidate, where I created an empty C++ project, I added an empty code file, and I typed in the two functions that you see over here. So in main, I go and I have a couple of integers, and I also have an integer array of characters, essentially. And then I go and call doit, passing in those three variables, as you see, and then I go and wait on the console. So what does doit do? Well, if I go and run this, you'll see that it outputs hello world. So doit does something which turns these characters into saying hello world. So let's have a look at that in full screen mode. So the way that it does it is by having two for loops. So in the first for loop, it goes up to size. He adds the one of the inputs to every character of the other input. And then it goes and takes that array and iterates over it again up to a size, casting to a char and putting that out on the screen using std cout, which is also why I needed the IO stream up there. So that's how we get the result that we saw. Our goal is to take this code, this is all of the code, to take this code and modify it such that we can perform a computation on the GPU. And when we look at our program and we want to identify areas to execute on accelerators like the GPU using C++ AMP, we're looking for data parallel algorithms. And when we say data parallel, the canonical example is a for loop. So here's a for loop over here, for example. And I can go and look here at the body and I see that actually there is no computation taking place. So if there's no computation, then that's not really something that's worth trying to offload to the GPU. And in fact, here we're making a system call, and we know that on the GPU there are some restrictions, and one of the restrictions is you cannot make any system calls. So this is definitely a bad example to try and transform to execute on the GPU. If we look at the other for loop here and we look at its body, there is actually, this is a computation that's happening here. So that's a good sign. And I'm not seeing here anything in the body that really scares me that cannot execute on the GPU without any little effort. So I'm actually going to go for this. I'm going to say, yep, this is the algorithm here, this piece of code. That's what I want to go and transform, this data parallel algorithm, to execute on the GPU. So let's get a copy of this. And that means we can have a reference as to what the code looked like and what it's going to look like after we're done with it. So what I've done here is I've brought in the C++ AMP library, and I'm also saving myself some typing by bringing the concurrency namespace. And I'm going to need that for a few types. The first one is the entry point to C++ AMP, which is a function, and it's a function called parallel for each. And you can think of this as a parallel for, if you're familiar with other parallel program models. We just call it parallel for each. And it's a function that takes two arguments. So let me make some changes here. The code won't be working for a while, but we'll build up until it does work. So the first change I want to make is I want to make sure that I've got a function call here. And then this function I know takes two arguments, a number and a piece of code. The number is how many times the piece of code will get executed by the implementation of the parallel for each function. So for a number, let's use that. And then for a piece of code, we'll use a standard C++ 11 lambda. So lambdas start with the capture list. So I have an empty capture list here with the square brackets. And then there is a function signature. And then comes the body, which is in the braces. And then that is it. So here we have a lambda, but you can't just pass any lambda to the parallel for each. You have to pass a lambda that it expects. And it expects a lambda that has a specific signature. So every time you pass a piece of lambda to a function, it's the implementation of the function that's going to invoke your piece of code, your lambda, so it better know what the signature is going to be. And the signature it expects is something where it can pass your code an index. So I'm going to just say it's another number, like so. Now, the other thing I notice here when I have this function is that I'm using a variable that is not declared within the scope of this lambda, but is in the outer body. So I need to capture this variable into the body. And that's the beauty of lambdas. You can capture variables that are declared earlier. So I can go here and just say equals, and that means I'm going to capture by value any variables that I try and use here. Just capture them by value into the lambda. And that's what we've just done. Now, this code still won't work, because even though I said here that it expects a number, that number has to be represented by an extent. So why does the number have to be represented by an extent? Well, the parallel for each and C++ AMP in general is a true multidimensional API. It turns out that frequently, not always, but frequently with data parallel algorithms, you're dealing with multidimensional data. So we wanted to make that a first-class experience. So if you were going to deal with two-dimensional data, two-dimensional computation, then you'd say here two, and then here in the constructor of the extent, you'd pass two integers. But to the parallel for each, you're still passing a single parameter, single object, the extent. If you said here three, then you'd pass three integers to its constructor. Here you're still passing a single extent, and so on and so forth. So that is why you have to represent the size, the multidimensional size using the extent, even when you only have one integer. Similarly, when you receive here an index that you typically use to index into your data, then that's going to also be represented by a multidimensional index. And this is the like extent. This index is also part of the concurrency namespace, and C++ AMP introduces that. Now, this code now receives an index, not an integer. So let's just temporarily fix this over here, just so we can get rid of that squiggly. And then this code still wouldn't work. If I go and look at the highlighted piece of code, this is the lambda. This is not new in C++ AMP. This is standard C++ 11 lambdas. But here in this lambda, you could write any C++ you want into on line 10 and additional lines. And that would not be good because you cannot execute the full C++ on the accelerator. Like, for example, you cannot make system calls. Another example is you can't use try-catch in here and exception handling. That's not supported on the GPU. So there's a number of restrictions. So what we need is a way to annotate functions, and lambdas are functions, to annotate these things to say that, hey, the compiler at compile time, check this and see that it meets the subset of C++, so it's restricted to that subset. And the way we do that is with a key new language feature that we added to the language. And that feature is restrict AMP. So with restrict AMP, now the compiler will check that over here you're not using anything that couldn't be executed on the GPU. Now let's talk a bit more about restrict AMP, just to show one more example. Let's say that I had my method here and I wanted to call it. And I wanted to call it like this. You'll see that I can't because this is checked for restrictions, but this one isn't. So what you have to do, you know it by now, you annotate that with restrict AMP as well. And now the compiler is going to be happy. Now, maybe in here, this is a utility function that I want to use on the CPU as well, not just from code that executes on an accelerator. So how can I make this code callable from the CPU too? Well, I can go here and say restrict CPU AMP. And now this code can be reused. So we don't have to have different signatures. It can be reused by both the CPU and the code that's been called from restrict AMP functions. Now, what if I wanted to have the same concept, signature, name, etc. for the function, but actually I wanted different implementations? Well, we can do that as well. So now what happens is that when you go and call my method from here, it will resolve to that function. And if from the CPU you called my method, then it will resolve to this function. So you can see that restrict AMP is truly part of the language and participates in overloading between functions too, like I'm demonstrating here. And in fact, restrict CPU is the implicit default, so you don't even need to write that. All your functions are restrict CPU if you don't annotate them. So that's a little explanation, a quick intro into restrict AMP. And now let's go back to our original example. Okay, so now that we've made this change, will this code work? Well, actually, no, it won't. There's one more change that we need to make. You see, what we're doing here is we have a pointer, and we're trying to access that here in the restrict AMP lambda. And you can't do that. That's one of the restrictions. You can pass pointers around within restrict AMP functions, but you cannot capture them from the host memory over here into the lambda over there. So how do we access that data then in the lambda that's going to execute on the accelerator? We use an ArrayView object. So the ArrayView is basically just a wrapper for the original container. So in the constructor, you pass the original container. This could have been a standard vector, standard array, whatever. So you pass that in there in the constructor. And you also tell it what you want the size of that container to be. So you could have reshaped it here, for example, using the extent. And then so you pass the size. Then you say what the elements of the container are. So in this case, they're integers. And again, you say if it's single dimensional or two or three or whatever. And this has to map, this rank of the ArrayView has to match the rank of the extent, of course. Now that I've done that, I can go and use ArrayView everywhere. So what you're seeing here is on line 8, this is not where any copy of data happened or anything like that. Here you just have a smart pointer to the original data, an alias for the original data. But as soon as you go and put stuff in ArrayView, now you can capture it by value and you can use it within restrict AMP and also outside of restrict AMP code. And that's the beauty of ArrayView. It lets you access the data wherever you want. And if I go and execute this now, you'll see that we get the same result, except this time the computation took place on the GPU. Now let's make a couple of small changes here. So here I said you have to pass an extend, but you can also pass an integer directly. And in fact, for single dimensional data, you don't have to say one, that's the default. And when the parallel for each computation here, the number of times your lambda is going to be invoked, matches the size of the ArrayView like it does in our scenario, then a good practice is to just get the extent from the ArrayView itself. And of course, that means that you don't really need to explicitly have an extent. And also with the ArrayView, even though you can index with it with an explicit integer, it's always best to index directly with the index object. So if this was a two-dimensional ArrayView, then your code would look the same. And by convention, this is just a coding guideline, we name this integer IDX. And now with these changes, we have the AMP code the way we would have written it. And you can see here, the when you compare the original code with the new code that we wrote, instead of using the container directly, you use the ArrayView, and that's your only extra line of code that you have here. And you turn your for loop, which had two arguments, the I and the size, into parallel for each call with the two arguments for size and for I. And that's basically all there is to it. Very, very simple. Now, let's look at a couple of more concepts, because it's a frequently asked question that I want to address. And this gives us a chance to also look what happens under the covers. So your CPU thread from main goes and calls doit. So this thread comes in here, calls parallel for each, and then it doesn't block here on line 11, it keeps on going, because this is an asynchronous operation. So it keeps on going and finds another computation, it queues this computation up as well, it keeps on going, and maybe at this point they have started executing, maybe they haven't, it doesn't matter. The CPU thread keeps on going and then reaches here, the line where it talks to ArrayView. Now ArrayView works very well with parallel for each. So even though parallel for each is asynchronous, if you're using ArrayViews in there, the ArrayView knows here on line 19 that it hasn't got the data that that you want it to be computed, so it's actually going to block. So this is where your CPU thread is going to block, on line 19. In the meantime, what we've done here is we've done some data dependency analysis, and we can see that you're using the ArrayView. So when we queue up this computation, we also copy the data for you to the accelerator. So typically, today at least, GPUs have discrete memory space, so an implicit on-demand copy takes place here for you. Then the computation goes and executes. Now, because you're using that same ArrayView over here, we have the data dependency, so we're not going to execute this computation until this one completes. So when that one completes, then the next one is pulled off the queue. Now, no data transfer needs to happen. The data is already there on the GPU, so we're just going to use the data directly for our second computation, whatever that is. Then this computation completes, and that's when the ArrayView, which when you try to access it blocked, it also said, hey, I'm going to copy the data back when the computations are done. So now it copies the data back, and now you can use it, and you can output it to the screen. So that's a bit of background information as to the on-demand data transfers that happen for you and how things are asynchronous, but also the system protects you, and also how you just need a single CPU thread to go and do all this. Now, let's change this code a bit and stay on the same theme. So now what we have is we don't have an ArrayView here in scope, so I'm going to have to use the original container. And now what do you think happens? Right. So what you may think happens is that you call doit, it goes, queues this up asynchronously, returns, then goes in here and tries to access the data, and then you're probably wondering what's going to happen. Well, what would happen if that was the case is you'd have a race here, because this container doesn't know how to work with parallel for each, so it may have the right data, it may not, depending on who completed first. But actually, don't worry, because the system won't let this happen in this scenario. Instead, what happens is you call here from your CPU thread parallel for each, it goes asynchronously, and then when you reach this line 13, the ArrayView goes out of scope. So the destructor of the ArrayView kicks in, and in the destructor is where we go and synchronize the data for you. So synchronize the data means that the original container will have access to the correct data. So when this unblocks and you return into main, that's when the computation is executed and the data was synchronized back. So it's safe to go and then execute this loop. If you wanted to be explicit about the synchronization, you can be. So you can go and call the synchronize methods, and then that's the that's what we do in the distractor. And notice that whenever there's a blocking call, we have an async variant for that. And this will give you back a completion future, and you can chain operations together. So it's a very nice, rich, asynchronous API. But for now, let's call just synchronize. And now we have this explicit. So it's line 12 that will block until the computation completes and the data is transferred back. And the beauty of this is that you can also wrap this with a try-catch, and then any errors that would have occurred in the computation or in the data transfer back, you'll be able to observe those as exceptions that will be raised from synchronize. You could also wrap the parallel for each with a try-catch, and then you'd catch exceptions when you queued up the computation. So there's no C-style error code design here. This is standard C++, so you get a standard C++ exceptions to work with. And with that, before I close this recording, I'll just share one more concept with you. What if I wanted to execute the computation on a specific accelerator? Or when I had two parallel for each, if I wanted to execute one on one accelerator and one and the other one on another accelerator? Well, accelerator is what represents the device, a C++ AMP target, which can be a GPU. And let's assume I had a function that returned one. I don't at this moment in time. Let's say that I had one, though. Now I have, in this variable, something that represents a target. So how do I tell the parallel for each to execute on that target? Well, that's very simple. You pass it in as the first argument. But there is a bit of a trick here. This won't work. Whenever you have an accelerator and you want to pass it to parallel for each, simply go and say default view. And what that does is that returns an accelerator view. I don't have time in this recording to go into what an accelerator view is. There are some advanced scenarios it enables. But for now, suffice to say that if you have an accelerator, you can get the default view and pass it to parallel for each, and then that parallel for each will execute on that accelerator. So I think you've got that now, but you're still probably wondering, how do you pick one? Because we don't have that function. Well, it turns out I've written one earlier, so let me bring it in. So here is my pick accelerator method that I'm calling from over here. So what I'm doing on line 8 is I'm just going and using the implicit constructor here, and I get an accelerator. Now, it just happens that when you do that, you now have a handle to the accelerator that the runtime has picked as the default. So the runtime picks a smart default for you, which is why you never had to specify it down here in the parallel for each during all of this recording. And if you want to just examine that one, you can just by doing this. So you can go and look, for example, at its dedicated memory. You can look at its description. You can look at whether it's got a display or not. Is it emulated? Does it support double precision? And so on and so forth. So you can you see, as an aside here, the beautiful IntelliSense that lets you explore our API, and you can do that in your own time. But you get the idea. You can go and explore the properties and decide if this is an accelerator for you. If it isn't, then you just want to get all the accelerators in the system. You can do that by calling the static getAll method on accelerator. That returns a vector of accelerators. So here I'm just iterating on this line using the new C++ 11 syntax. So I'm iterating on every accelerator that the C++ AMP runtime is aware of. And then I just go here and check, for example, in my example on line 12, I'm checking that I want to execute on something that's not running my display, if possible. And that's where I would go and assign a chosen one. And then I just return that out. So this is just a mini example of how you could choose an accelerator in order to then pass it to a parallel for each. And with that, I think I'm going to stop here because this is long already. If you have any questions, by all means, just leave a comment at the bottom of wherever you found this video, and I'll be sure to answer them.